and discusses them as the poop on the jacket says, they evaluate them from modern military strategy. In other words, they take a battle of the Old Testament and discuss it in light of present-day military tactics and that kind of thing. Makes an interesting reading, but I began to look at it and I found out, lo and behold, they take the Bible as a secondary source. They try to come up with the explanation of how the Israelites, the strategy the Israelites, Moses used to get the Israelites across the Red Sea, for example. They take another place and they say, use such expression as biblical tradition as this. And that's the thing you find in so many books today. There'll be books on the Bible, they'll have information that you like to have, but they slip this other end until they're dangerous unless a fellow is already seasoned and he knows what to watch for. You just can't risk it. So put that one to bed.
I'll never remember or forget.
Didn't that make it
more like it? I can't remember anything else. But remember when we were riding in that bus along the Mediterranean shore there?
Yeah, going
to Mount Carmel.
Yeah.
And he said that this guy would tell all about 18, 12,000, 15,000, 30,000 years ago. He said, we just don't believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I don't hesitate to call these guys' hands. They kind of see me kind of. We were over on the one group, we were on the Sea of Galilee. Well, his name was, A.B. The nickname is an Arab guy, so we call him A.B. for short. And he was a pretty good sport. We've been picking him, he's picking us. So we got on the boat, getting ready to go across to Tiberias. And I said, A.B., how about me giving these fellows the Baptist version of this thing before you start? Okay. So I told him about the origin of the church. Galilee and the ministry of Christ there. I laid it on Baptist style. I got to, he started, like you said. Now, a lot of what Dr. Cross has said is true. I said, A.B., it's all true. But it's amazing how, of course, a lot of those guides, they go through a school that they must pass in order to qualify as a guide. And the fellow that wrote the book that the guides must learn by was a Jew. He's a scholarly Jew. But he looks at the Bible, not too surprisingly, and a lot of it is being just kind of a record like any other book. I was quite surprised, Mr. Albert Eben is an Oxford graduate in England. He used to be foreign minister, he's in the Knesset now. He's written two books, large books. One is My People, the other is My Land. And in there, he takes the Bible as a secondary source. He doesn't use it as a proof text at all. He will put what he thinks he has found out in history and archaeology against it. So you just have to watch these Jews in their writing, because you have to bear in mind, in spite of the fact that you're on their side, they're not born again Christians, and they're just not going to write from that point of view. All right. How long was the Mesopotamia here?
From the 600 miles
east-west
is
300 miles. That's right here on page 3. That's right, you were out here just discussing it. Page 3 on that left-hand column.
Okay. All right.
Well, he'd just be a pretty good idea to mark it, because some guy just might be dumb enough to ask it sometime.
I
Yeah, a good way to stick that in your memory, that the Mesopotamia is 600 miles north and south, cut that half in two for the width, 300 miles. That kind of helped to remember. You see some of these men that are the other way. You know, they're just about 5 foot high and about 6 foot round. Okay, let's take a look at these rivers. We've been talking about the terrain around them quite a lot. Top page, on the top right-hand column there on page 3, both the Tigris and the Euphrates have their sources in the mountains of Armenia. The Mount Ararat is in the mountains of Armenia. This is the Armenian range here. All these maps are so heavy, maybe you can help them if you get that one. Turkey goes right out to the neck and then you cut the head off. And then and how far the other way? Turkey comes now in about here. Right here, you come into Syria, around 11 down here, below Syria. And then the right is in here, and then Iran. Demonstrate that on the map. See, there's a map 5. Where do we? Which map are we looking at? It had it enveloped in one of them to show. Maybe it was. Oh, but it shows the message. Now you can tell when looking at this one that, I'll stay over in the world. Yeah, that's what it was. Here is Iraq. This is the Tigris River right up through here. This is the Euphrates River right up through here. And the whole Mesopotamia, I think it's where you go, is inside Iraq.
Let me ask this about that used to be much of that lower part of the known as Babylonia. Is that possibly where commercial Babylon will
be? There are two theories about, you're talking about the Babylon and Revelation.
Yes.
Some people believe Babylon will actually be rebuilt. Others think that's a spiritual fact. They would be a conglomerate of the false religions. One reason that I question the rebuilding of the commercial city of Babylon is because there's some pretty potent prophecies against Babylon having been rebuilt. And it went down. The prophecies indicate to me that it will not be rebuilt. They said the Arab won't even pitch his tent inside where the city used to be. And that's the archaeologists and what has been there to say that that is true. However, there's some strong prophecies concerning Tyre, and it'll be wiped off the face of the earth and never be rebuilt again. And yet, I went down there and photographed. There's a tire. In fact, the Israelis have pastored it with bombs a few times. You've seen it in the news. How do you explain that? Well, I was rather curious and a little bit shocked when I saw that, because I've made some pretty raw statements about they want to prove that there's a Bible is
Forrest?
And let the agnostics pick in another piece to rebuild time. But here's what happened down there. The ruins of Roman Tyre, the ruins of Grecian Tyre, and the Lebanese Tyre in the town that is there today, the Nebuchadnezzar destroyed. They built an island over the city of Tyre. And then Alexander the Great built the causeway up to the capital. And that day is kind of like the peninsula stuck out there. See what I put. But I asked the guide, I said, where was the Phoenician Tower? He showed me the ruins of Greece and Roman Tower and present day Tower. Where was the Phoenician, location of the Phoenician Tower? And they just didn't register. And so my explanation for that is that the prophecy, of course, is better against the Tyre, the Phoenician Tyre. Phoenician was fine. And nobody seems to know where Phoenician Tyre stood. There have been other cities by that name built on a coast, but for the Phoenician Tyre, there are no ruins. I've seen photographs. I've seen pictures and read to people of fishermen spreading their nets, as the Bible says, on the site of ancient Tyre. I don't know how they determined that that was the site of ancient Tyre. My guess is because of the coast there, Phoenicia, in the general area where Tyre is, and fishermen spread their nets, of course, they actually said that. You know, who knows? But that. There are some problems like that you can't be real dogmatic about, because prophecy seems to be very positive, and yet there's some other prophecies that seem to...
This Tyre, now, obviously, the crossway out there in that area where the island was, is there something on that now?
It, what they told us was the island is just a strip of land that just juts out, and it's it has buildings on it back into the area, but and the Phoenician Tyre had to be in that area somewhere, but the Tyre that was to be destroyed and not be rebuilt was on shore, not the one that was out on the island, and so just where on the shore it originally was seems to be a question. Alexander move this material from it to build a causeway. And where did he move it from? He left it completely scraped. They literally scraped the ground to get enough to make that causeway as efficient as they could attack. And so normally cities in that area, in that whole Middle East country, when a city is destroyed, captured, burned down a lot of time, partially battered down with battering around. And finally, when somebody else decided to build at that location, instead of clearing the ground away like we do with bulldozers and so forth, they just kind of leveled that rubble down and built the next city on top of it. And they got to knock that one down and built on top of that one. And that's the reason we find these tells, we call them. A tell is nothing more or less than a mound. Or this city was destroyed, leveled off, and then another city was leveled off. You can find one city after another. The Tell of Megiddo, I believe they said they went through 13 levels of civilization going down to that. If they now have a staircase, you can open the top, go clear down to the bottom, to the little, where the little spring was that supplied the water for. And then when you get down to that, you have to come back out. Flying back out, it's down below the level of the tell. So,
the tell is a T-E-L-L?
T-E-L.
T-E-L.
T-E-L. That's simply a mound of remains where the ruins of ancient cities are. And that's the favorite pastime in Israel, is archaeology. Everybody. six, and got the cover in, and was fine, but ruined. I have a, if Israel has a law, we're really getting far afield, but you're here to learn about that country, that's what we're doing. Israel has a law that any archaeological discovery, any archaeological find, belongs to government. You can't find the place to start digging and take artifacts out of there and sell them as a private enterprise. They do that, they say, to preserve them in their museums and so forth for other people to see and not let them be destroyed. But the guy that had there one time has a pretty good rapport with the Bedouin. And the Bedouin don't do a lot of communicating with the Israelis. They live out in these areas, and so they uncover some of this stuff, and he gets it. He has a, I don't know how he does, but he has a certificate from the government. He can sign and give you, certify that you bought this legitimate, and you didn't buy it privately from some fellow that found out here, and so you own it legally. And he had quite a few items, small items, and he gave me a lamp from David's time. I think that's something I'm going to know. You can look in your dictionary, there's no question about it. They have an encyclopedia about a Bible encyclopedia. Across the page will have maps of different periods of time, and it's easy to pick out this one from David's time. And so I'm guessing got it. He asked me if I'd like to have it. I said, are you kidding? I want a lamp from the time of David, make another lamp about history. Oh, we got to be ready there. We were talking about Iraq occupying, the what was once Mesopotamia inside Iraq now. And it's being kind of splattered with the bombs right now.
With Iraq and Iran, did they together make up what was known as the Medo-Persian Empire?
The Medo-Persian Empire shortly became the Persian Empire. But the Persian Empire, it came all the way to what is now Greece. If you remember, the reason the Grecian Empire got on the way, the Persians either did it or had Philip of Macedon assassinated. Alexander was his son. When they killed his dad, he made him a matter of honor. And he grabbed his sword and started cutting and slashing, and found out he was pretty good at it. He just had it easy and just kept coming. And he drove the Persians clear back and crammed them down the country they came out of. And so the Persian Empire ran at one time all the way to Greece and down to Egypt. So there. Now, if you're talking about where the original Persian was before they began to expand their empire, they were in here in Egypt. And the Persians were in the same general area back here where Iran is in here now. And if you notice on the news in the last few days, the network news station has emphasized that Iranians are not Arabs. There is a little corner of Iran that is occupied by Arabs. And this is what the scrap is about. Iraq is trying to take that area that is occupied by Arabs and some others that Iran took from them to say that they went back. And so Iran is where Persia originally was before they expanded their empire to the I helped you a great deal on that one, didn't I?
Well, if
Babylon is to be rebuilt, if commercial Babylon is to be rebuilt, I think obviously will be rebuilt in this area. Or originally. Nineveh, the Titans captured. Egypt, and Rome. Rome was on the Assyrian. Their capital was on the Euphrates. Probably you remember against Nineveh pretty severe also. It would be wiped out and never be built anymore. Some historians, I don't have the original source, I've read, where they'll say that by the time Alexander, the Grecian Empire, was being built, that his army has marched right by the side of Nineveh and didn't know it. It was so wiped out and didn't find everything. Well, about the only people that did that much were the Carthaginians. I mean, the Romans, when they took Carthage, they were pretty rough on those customers back in the era. They saw that this man was well deserved. That is, they couldn't do any agriculture there, as you say. There was no chance for an uprising there because they wouldn't have anything to live on. That's a pretty dirty trick, but they didn't. They kind of played for keeps in those wars. The mountains of Armenia was in search of about the time we got to be over here. One of these last points is down further than the here is Armenia. This is the last mountain range of Armenia. Ararat is used in that area. And it's the mountain of Ararat stands on the border. You actually have to like Turkey now. You look at Ararat and you can tell. Mount Ararat, of course, this word is rather non specific, but the mountain, you come up on the west side of it, you come up from Turkey, you come up on the east side, you come up from Russia. It's on the border between Russia and Turkey.
Russia only completed that or what?
I don't think so. I think it still stands that way. All the fellows that have attempted to get to the top of it have come up from that side, from Turkey, because Russia didn't want to go up on that side. They did like nothing less than for them to be able to find the ark and prove the record of the act of the Bible. Turkey has become less favorable than it's been difficult to get permission. But the mountains of Armenia coming across here is the Euphrates River, Tigris River, originally, and this mountain range, which is 10,000 feet high. Well, some people compare that to Pike's Peak. I think it's about 10,000 feet high. In Colorado. Pretty high mountain range. There's snow cap, enough to keep snow in there year round. From that source, the rivers originate. The Tigris River follows a little closer to mountain range than the Euphrates, so it runs more swiftly and more directly. The Euphrates, coming through flatter land, winds more and flows more slowly along the river. That's why. One reason why that the prophecy says that the river Euphrates will be dried up to prepare the way for the kings of the east. It is the natural barrier between the kings of the east and the Middle East. And because it's a wide river, it comes wide very early and makes it difficult here to cross with heavy equipment. But with that, the when dried up, came to the east, and went back across the mountain, and decided it's not going to be that difficult over here.
Have you used the day in
society when they begin to talk about putting a dam over this huge territory. They thought that was going to dry it up. But instead of drying it up, they're backing up.
There's two
dams on down,
there's
a brook out
there.
Yeah. If those dams don't dry a river up, they back up a reservoir. Saying it might dry up, they decided during the dry season somebody planted bombs and that all of those dams and left that water loose, it might pretty well dry it up from the upper end. I don't know. That's an earthquake prone area. The deepest rift
on the mole comes right up through here.
Really, I guess what amounts to the west on the east Africa in the northern part of Africa is the deepest rift, and it is active. It's very active down here. It's active, it's spreading apart in Africa, so much so that it has been photographed. Some of you have seen the photographs, slides that I have made the photographs. Widening so that you can actually see the cracks, and you can see the small volcanoes that have been created in the rift as it was widening. Things are cracking, and that thing has a little trigger settlement mousetrap that runs down the mountain bottom. You know who's going to trip that trigger. But this is an earthquake prone area, so that is a possibility, an earthquake. Changes the course of that river. The Jordan River here now comes out on the side of Mount Light at the base of the mountain. I understand one time it came out of a cave here on the mountain, but sometime during history there was evidently a rock fall or something underground that blocked that and changed the course of the flow. You know, it doesn't take a great deal to movement of that type to change the course of the river and change its supply of water.
But you said that the king is the hand of the Lord, is the river and the water.
That's right.
Whatever he will.
That's right. He's turned them any direction he wants them. In fact, the Yankees turned one during the Civil War down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, you remember. The way they kept that Mississippi River runs right under a bluff. And the rebels had guns setting up on that, and there's no way that a ship could come in there and assault that city. So they dug a channel to change the course of that river where they could throw those ships in there where they could open the head of guns up right on the city. And the old battlefield there is interesting to tour. Out away from there where the two armies fought for a long time until they finally took the city by this means. So there's been a lot of rivers, courses have been changed by one means or another. You remember the Persians we were talking about changed the course of the Euphrates one time down here on the south end. It ran right through the city. And the king, ruler of Babylon, left his son in charge. Now he was out, he got stuck on archaeology himself. He was out of the country digging up a few things and left his boy in charge in the shadow. And like happened, he was a boy at home by himself. He had a party, got all the gals in there, and they drank and cavorted, and even pulled the guard off. They can't get through these walls, boy, there's no way. And so while they were having a party, the Persians just changed the course of the river, and when they did, they just marched their armies right under the wall where the river used to run, and boom, went Belshazzar. So I don't know what to do, but the course of rivers are not that difficult to change, certainly when God decides to do it. So it's the Euphrates, which is now the natural barrier, and the kings of the east will be dried up so the kings of the east can come through. What would you think if in this present skirmish something would happen to dry up the upper end of that Euphrates River, and Russia would come charging down across Iran and Iraq? I would hope I would be looking down instead of looking, reading the daily newspaper here from a high seat. I would hope the rapture would have taken place. If it didn't, I would have to apologize for some preaching I've been doing. And I guarantee
it's right on the border.
The what's taking place today is in the right area. The right people are in the right places.
We've
talked about it and preached about it, you know, for a long time, but I wonder sometimes if it doesn't get to be more of kind of a theory that you don't really anticipate taking place, and sometime somebody else is living on this earth. We may get the free ride out.
What the Premier of China said before he became Premier, he said 10 years in our war.
Yeah. Well, they
don't forget that. Said, if we can get it, it is imminent. That if we don't forget it, then we can negotiate for more.
I have a slide made of that quotation.
Yes, I just cut it out.
It's very, very. In fact, I also have one made. The U.S. military generals that went to the NATO meeting were quite surprised to find that they really anticipated the war with Russia within the 1980s. They really expected it to take place.
What you're saying is that the United Nations says that all nations of the world should be held by Russia.
Well, they want Russia whipped so they can have it. And that's a part of the game. I think now more and more, yes, sir. Thing that seems to be shaping up, either the kings of the east are going to challenge the Russian invasion, or else the Russian invasion is going to be destroyed and they're going to move into the back. Two theories on that. Whichever takes place, it's getting ready for somebody to make the checkers are on the board and getting ready for somebody to make the first move. And Russia pretty well made the first move, and she jumped into Afghanistan. Hal Lindsey says that Afghanistan was Russia's first move for the invasion of the Middle East. Well, that's getting pretty positive, you know. I don't think there's any question that it's a part of the Russian strategy. But to say that that's the beginning of Russia's invasion of the Middle East, period, is becoming quite an authority. Yes, if you take a look at they have South Yemen here. Pardon? Russia has bases here. They helped Ethiopia out and got located right across the other side here. They went to the interesting thing, when they came into Ethiopia, they said, now the real rebel, the real problem is right up in here. So we're going to go in here. So they're on both sides, they put a stop on the bottom right here.
Cuba's right
in there. And Cuba, it was right in there with them. And over here, they have taken Afghanistan. They're still trying to There is a, I had some of you who were at church here some week ago, saw the picture I showed of the Russian bear with Afghanistan, the hunk of honey in his hand. The bees were flying, still flying all around, but he was hanging on to that honey. Now that's about the picture. He's still getting stung, but he's hanging on to Afghanistan. Oh, I look at the picture here. He's got this situation here, where he can just block traffic here. He's got Afghanistan, and war is broken out over here, and Russia is pumping material into here to supply. They're nuke, of course, and Iran is right in the middle, and just about as helpless as they can. They just about shot their one on the turret. They can't get any new parts, and Iraq is bombed their biggest refinery, and they just are going to be out of commission shortly. And Russia may find it necessary to come in there and try to help them out. Well, it depends on who's talking whether it would be feasible or not. Well, Iraq doesn't like the United States. Then we don't even have an embassy there. We don't even have official relations with them. To get into Babylon, or Babylon used to be prior to the war, to the Iranian tension there, the only way you could get a passport to Iraq from the United States, unless, you know, they just kind of moved there. It's optional. We didn't have official relations with them. But you could sometimes get a passport to India and get a visa from India into Iraq if you wanted to visit the eastern side of town.
Billy got that, didn't he?
Huh? Billy got Bolivia. He got there. They're part of the team, too, you know. And there's several tours that go into that. They've had to kind of around the house. They have to catch Iraq in a good mood when they move just to America. So now they only have to come to India. But let's finish our picture. Iran, obviously, is not going to be much deterrent to anybody who wants to come in here. Iran covers the Persian Gulf from here to here, the whole long border. That would put the stopper in here, where 60% of the world's oil comes out. If Russia has Iran, they have the Persian Gulf and control the Red Sea. They've got a good navy, the Mediterranean Sea. They've got the land route covered coming out of Russia into here.
Actually, if Russia wanted to, they could mount an invasion in the Iranian desert. They could take that.
Well, there wouldn't be any problem for Russia to invade Iran and take it. It'd be no problem, not near the problem Afghanistan was. But the thing they don't want to do is to antagonize the Arabian, the Muslim world, because they need the oil. Russia's oil is running, beginning to run low too. And they need the support of the Arabs. And also, they don't realize it, but the prophet said that part of it are going to be in the invasion. So they don't realize why they don't want to antagonize them so much, but they need them as allies. So for this reason, they're slow about invading these Muslim countries. But they can wait. They don't mind waiting. And all the time, dear old Jimmy's been demilitarizing our country. Forget it. He actually believed for a long time that he could talk to the Russians and believe what they said. He's finding out the hard way he couldn't, but 15 times, we've done this in a precarious situation. The attack, according to them, I think I'm one of the answers to this, Russia is not so interested in launching an attack here as they are here. Here's where the profit center is. The attack is going to come. What they're doing over here is cut us all, cut us in two. And then they're doing it in Mexico with South America. And they'll have their eyes so they can. We can't do them any harm. We can't do them any harm wherever it leads.
Yeah, they have a plan. They don't want to antagonize anybody. They just want to close it.
Well, they don't mind antagonizing anybody so long as it doesn't change their plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
If anyone feels the call of New Zealand, then I'd say the place.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to have you.
Strange that nobody has felt the call to Russia or Iran or any of that area in recent years lately. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's about as big a jungle as in the rest of them, isn't it? The only one I can think of any worse is San Francisco or New York. I used to kid Martin Canavan about he'd take his vacation in New York. Man, what in the world he wouldn't take a vacation. But he just loves to go to New York. There's something about he was a big city man. He could get out in the country and hike, and not Martin. He didn't want any of that. So, and he had a lot of information as a result of that, too, a lot of knowledge. Okay, let's take a little look at some of the rainfall over here. It won't take long to look at it because there's not much of it. Over on page 5. The importance of the Tigris and Euphrates to the existence of civilization in the Mesopotamian Valley is underscored by a look at rainfall statistics. In Babylonia, the southern end of the Mesopotamian Valley, in Babylonia, rainfall averages 6 inches a year. It comes mainly during winter and spring. 6 inches a year. We thought we had a drought when we got more than that. And some years there is none at all during the summer. Of course, we're used to none at all in the summer, but we're used to more than 6 inches in the winter and fall. In the hill country of Assyria, the annual average is 15 to 16 inches. You're talking about what our average rainfall is here up in the hill country of Assyria. And where does all the water come from these big rivers then? The mountains, the amount may be 30 inches a year. And that's when we think we really have double our normal rain. We think we really have a rainfall in the snowpack. You imagine what the snowpack is in the 10,000 foot mountains, 30 inches of rainfall in a year. That's where the water starts flowing through. And that snow continues to melt, the water continues to flow. Just like there's some rivers that come in. I guess the Sacramento River is pretty well fed by snow melt. During this time. In fact, the business, most of the rivers in the San Joaquin area are snow melt from the snowpack. That's the reason they're more interested in the snowpack than they are in rainfall in Southern California, because they just wash it off the ocean and it's gone.
Why do the snow around
Shasta? Yeah. Did it? It stays snow capped, I think, the year round. During that drought, it began to get pretty thin up there, I understand, but it pretty well stays snow.
That may be a logical reason for the drought, don't they?
Yes. If the snow cap doesn't build up, they don't get a good snowpack up there, then if the drought, incidentally, there is, I might be in touch with the U.S. News maybe at a time, one or the other. just recently published a picture of a world map showing that the desert areas are expanding rather rapidly. And that could well be if the rainfall, snow shuts out up there, it could dry those rivers up. Sure do it. And the scripture says very plainly that there will be famine in the end time. So the two can well come together. So every time I look at this little rainfall they have down there in the southern Mesopotamia, I think about what the fellow told me in Egypt. We were there the first time. Somebody said, how much rain do you have here? Oh, he said, sometime it rained 2-3 drops, rest time dry. Well, that's about right. They don't get very much rain. Our next study will be in Egypt, but they get very little rain down here. There's a water supply for the Nile. The Great Nile River comes from Lake Victoria and another mountain range over here that feeds it. The rain in there feeds that river now. It's amazing how many of the major rivers of the world are fed from mountain areas where the rainfall is, and the river where the water is doesn't get much rain. So the irrigation systems are set up. And don't forget, because somebody might ask you sometime, that the Sumerians, except in the river, you couldn't plant in the river. So they had to figure some way to get that water out of the river out on the soil. And so they developed the canal system, irrigated. And that's what we'll pick up next week, the people of the soil.